Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Cause and Effect Radio, brought to you on the Business Radio X network and from our good friends at UHY Advisors. Stone Payton here with you. Our fearless producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, sitting this one out because we have a studio full. We got some folks from the UHY Advisors team, and we have some other folks that we're going to visit with on a topic that I think is important to all of us. Please let me introduce at the top of the show here, Miss Amy Gallagher. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us back. I'm Amy Gallagher, principal with our Resource Solutions practice in the Atlanta office for UHY. Glad to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you back. We had a good time the last time you were on the show.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I mean, that was incredible for me. We also have with us Miss Melanie Bayer. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Help us get our arms around the topic for today. What are we going to focus on in today's conversation?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. So UHY, we're a top global CPA firm, and our national consulting practice is based here in Atlanta. And one of our practice areas that Amy mentioned is our Resource Solutions Group, where we work with companies across different industries, sizes, and different stages of maturity. And one common trend that we see amongst all of them is the growth that the organizations we work with are having and are experiencing, whether that be through acquisition, organic growth, or through disposition of non-performing business units. So we're here to talk about growth, and we're excited to have some of our guests join us today.
Yeah, and we've got two smart folks to share their insights with us, but we also have in the studio today, not for the first time, back on the Business Radio X microphone, at least to some degree, our good buddy Frank Finello. How you been, man?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you doing?
I am doing well. So this business of growth, this is an important topic for you guys.
Absolutely. I mean, what's going on in the economy, especially here in the Atlanta marketplace, it's phenomenal. But we're seeing that trend everywhere. In 2017, we're expecting some phenomenal growth.
All right. Let's talk to the smart folks with real jobs that are really doing this stuff out in the marketplace. First, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, HVMG Corporate Leadership Team, Ms. Maria D'Alessandro. Did I do that right?
It sounds better than when I say it. Thank you.
Well, welcome to the show. Can you just give us a little bit of a feel for what HVMG is out there doing for folks, and then maybe describe your role a little bit?
Sure. It's HVMG stands for Hospitality Ventures Management Group. So doesn't that explain what we do?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So on to the next topic. No, we actually own and third-party manage hotels across the country. So we actually... we'll actually manage franchise and independent hotels from 100 rooms to 700 rooms, otherwise known as keys in the industry. And I am the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, and I'm responsible for ensuring that our books are prepared according to GAAP. And also, we have hotel industry specifics that we must adhere to, as well as implementing technology to support our hotels and the lovely risk management program, which you can imagine I could talk 8 hours about the interesting claims we get at our hotels.
This is all you do?
That's it.
So I'm sure the vast majority of our listeners know, but this is for Ryan's benefit, because of course I know as well. GAAP, that's an acronym or something?
Yeah, I could come up with a certain names of that. We'll just tell you generally accepted accounting principles. Yes.
Okay. All right, good. Well, welcome to the show. Look forward to getting your insight and perspective. We also have with us Chief Accounting Officer with WestRock, Mr. Stephen Meadows. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
Now, you sound like you may be from just a little bit east of Sandy Springs.
I am. I'm originally from England.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, I love the accent.
Been in the States for 40 years.
Wow.
Yep.
So London, just as a little aside, is my wife has a real job. She's a consultant with IBM. And most of the world travel that I've done has been largely on IBM's nickel. And London is this town that she spends a lot of time in and she knows well. And we go there quite a bit.
Well, it's a very nice town, especially in the middle of London.
So do you ever get that? Oh, you're from England. Do you know so-and-so?
Do you know
Clive?
Yeah, I used to when we lived in Houston, but not so much these days. I think it's more the global village and That doesn't really happen quite so often.
Man, you got to stay after the show and do some voiceover work for us. Man, I love that voice. That is fantastic.
It's what you get.
All right. Give us a little insight on West Rock, your role, what you guys are out there doing for folks.
West Rock got formed in July of 15 last year with the combination, the merger of Midwest Vaco Corporation, a paper company, and Rock 10, a paper company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we have about 28 mills around the world, most of them in the U.S., one in Brazil, one in India. And we also then use manufactured paper and then use that paper in many, maybe about 200 plus plants or again around the world to convert into corrugated boxes and folding carton boxes and provide solutions to consumer packaging companies. So,
all right, it's time to clock in now. Now we have to go to work. The topic is growth. How do you guys measure growth over there?
We measure growth many ways. First of all, financially, I would say our primary measurement is adjusted free cash flow. So we measure that. We also measure adjusted EBITDA. We measure return on capital. And so we have many financial measures. We also measure number of employees, number of locations, number of customers. There's many, many different parameters.
You're making me feel so good because I went to a talk the other night and the guy mentioned EBITDA and I didn't know what it was. And I own 40% of a pretty successful business. So I didn't know what it was, but I didn't ask the question, but someone else did. Tell me if I've got it right. Earnings before interest, taxes,
depreciation.
Oh, duh. It's not ta.
Yeah.
Okay.
Taxes.
Okay. I had it wrong. Glad
earnings,
I
asked. Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
All right. I'm glad we had you handle that because I would have had it absolutely wrong.
Me too.
So, Maria, these metrics, these measures that he's describing, is that pretty generally accepted or is that the norm? Is that what you guys do or there's some other things or leading indicators you guys look at in terms of measurement?
Completely different. You know, every industry thinks they're unique, and the hotel industry is no different. We have a management company, and we have performance metrics of the management company. And, of course, growth in revenue is key. Of course, our investors want us to have free cash flow to grow and grow because it's cash in their pocket. So that's the management company. For the owners, investors, they actually can be mom and pop investors. They could be REITs. They could be private equity firms. So they have their own metrics for growth. But as long as we're growing market share, so that's in our industry standard, it's called RevPAR. So it's making sure that your hotel has...
Man, there's a lot of little phrases and acronyms in this business.
Learning.
We're going to have to post like a glossary when we publish this thing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just your market share. So if you're in a specific market, you want to have your biggest piece of the pie. And that's when our owners, investors want to make sure that they're getting more than their fair share. 100% isn't enough. They want to get 120%. But then there is some, you know, on the bottom line, again, it's EBITDA and because they need to make sure that they're getting a return on their investments. So that is a similar metric that we have for our owners. But from our perspective, guest satisfaction, you want to have a balanced scorecard. If your guest satisfaction is better than your competitors in your market, you're going to grow your market share. So we place just as much of an emphasis on guest satisfaction as we do on revenue.
Yeah, I don't want to give the impression it's just financial. As I tried to explain, we have many other measures. We measure customer satisfaction religiously. Through surveys, and we link that to our even to some of our compensation goals. So we are very concerned about partnering with our customers in the right way.
So would you guys say that you find that even just engaging in the act of asking customers how we're doing, that in and of itself, that helps strengthen that relationship, just the fact that you're engaging them and asking them? Has that been your experience?
Yeah, obviously I am not fronting onto customers in my role.
Right.
So I'm talking about this secondhand, but we have an enormous focus on the customer and delivering solutions that they want and partnering with them. We don't want to be seen as just a deliverer of a box and just a supplier. we want to be able to provide solutions to companies together. So there is a huge amount of talking to the customers, listening to the customers, working together with the customers.
So there's some insight. Be nice to your customers. Engage them. Mm-hmm. That's worth the broadcast right there, right? Yeah. So at first blush for me anyway, this whole idea of growth, it sounds nice. It sounds sexy. I got to believe it comes with its own challenges, though. Is that where UHY Advisors gets involved with clients? Are you guys helping them anticipate, mitigate, work through challenges that you guys have seen over and over? Amy, Melanie, give us some insight on this.
Absolutely. You know, for us, we kind of are a direct reflection of growth in the economy. So when we see our clients going through a lot of growth, typically that also means that they need support from a company like UHY in the different areas that we can help them with. So certainly we help them with, you know, if you see a company going through a ton of growth, sometimes the people that they currently have don't have the qualifications to be effective in a large corporation, which was actually one of the first engagements that we did 11 years ago. So they really needed CPA level resources to do their accounting, and the current staff that they had for a small company didn't have those skills. And so they came to us and said, we need to bring in some people to help get us through this period while we hire more full-time resources that have the skill set that we need long-term. So we're able to help in those ways. But really, it's being there and helping support our clients through their growth in whatever way we can. Take the workload off their current staff, help them keep the morale up by giving them access to expertise, just a number of different ways.
I would think that because you work with multiple clients, mm-hmm. that you probably see some patterns, some things happening. So maybe you can get a little ahead of the curve mm-hmm. for your clients. Is that accurate, Frank?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's interesting when the company's going through growth, there's really kind of, grossly generalize, there's two types of people within an organization. They're builders and maintainers. And oftentimes as an organization is growing, you need to build something new. You need to build new processes. You need to build the effect of integrating the companies. And those are the people you want to sometimes bring in from the outside to help during the transition period. But once you're done with that step, they don't want to maintain. They want to go on to the next big project. And so an organization needs a mix of both of those individuals.
So I have been told before, and I think it has probably been in this studio, it may have been at a workshop, that where you can see some of these challenges manifest are in people, process, and technology. First of all, I want to tell this group, we need a third word that starts with a P for technology, because it would be a lot easier to remember all that. So I'm going to put you guys on that task.
I'm making a note of that.
Is that accurate, Maria, Stephen? Is that accurate? And can you maybe share some examples? And I'll ask both of you, but I'll start with Maria.
Having been a consultant for 10 years, I absolutely, I bought into the people, process, and technology. Technology is controllable, and that's an investment, making the right investment. And in our industry, and specifically our company, if we do our job well, we actually put ourselves out of a job. Because we're turning around a hotel. We get a hotel that's underperforming, and then we turn it around, and it has a great return on the investment, and our investors sell the property. So we are constantly flipping, and our portfolio is constantly changing. Like this year, we added 6 hotels in the summer, and then we lost 5 hotels because they were sold. Investors were very happy and got a great return on their investment. So when you have so much constant upheaval, you need to really rely on technology, right? Because technology can, you can flex with technology. And so we invest in a lot of more cloud, you know, it's basically software as a service, right? Where you can pay per hotel. So you lose a hotel, you don't have to pay for it. So we don't have to invest a lot in the infrastructure of technology. But the technology has to be able to support our general managers at our hotel who we need out, you know, the guests. They need to be out front talking with the guests and making sure they're satisfied. They don't need to spend a lot of time in technology. So we're investing a lot in technology, and it's the people side that is more of the challenge, right?
Because people are crazy. I've been around them my whole life. I'm telling you, they're crazy.
Exactly. And like I said, at the hotels, to ask a general manager to do a payroll accrual or end of the month accruals, these guys didn't go to college to become accountants. And so, you know, we have to kind of manage expectations at the hotels but yet be able to flex at corporate as we're doing, you know, 30 hotels, 35 hotels. So that really is our challenge, is managing the workload.
Well, I would think, too, maybe you've got competency is a moving target, right? I mean, everything, nothing really remains the same. So like at an organization of the size and complexity of a WestRock, you may have a very talented, effective person, and then as things shift and you've got new technology and processes coming in, they could really lose some ground. They could practically become incompetent at their job. Is that accurate?
Well, I go back to what Frank said. You have builders or people who love change, and you have maintainers, and they're people who kind of may not like change quite so much, and so they wish things may stay the same. But and you do need a good mix of both. For the people who like change, you know, they usually love multitasking. They love being collaborative. They like being given new challenges. They like sorting out puzzles. And so that's a different skill set than maintaining. On the process side, when you merge and acquire other companies, you have to integrate them. You have to bring them together. And it's quite incredible sometimes how different two companies can be. They're doing exactly the same thing, basically, but yeah, they're doing it in completely different way. I mean, you've got centralized versus decentralized. And you've got certain things that are centralized and certain things that are decentralized. You've got insourcing, people who do everything themselves, and then people who outsource. You've got people who have maybe everything on one ledger system and others that have it on 25 or 50 ledger systems or different ledger systems. You've got domestic versus foreign. So you've got all these variations that you have to deal with. And then on technology, again, the choices that are out there to process all your revenue, to process all your costs, to process your payroll, to record your general ledger transactions, to keep track of your people, to do taxes. I mean, it's staggering, the portfolio of technology that's out there, and then bringing it all together and making it all work together without losing momentum. I mean, it's just it's a huge challenge every time you do one of these things, even small ones. And it's just quite significant.
Well, you touched on an interesting point for me anyway. I wonder if sometimes it doesn't go smoother, you know, if a box company merges with a surfboard manufacturer than it does if two box companies merge, right? I wonder if that doesn't even go smoother.
Well,
it
might go smoother because I think the integration factor is not going to be quite so high.
Right.
Obviously, a surfboard manufacturer is going to have a completely different side to it than a box company. But you still might want to consolidate that surfboard manufacturer into the financial results
right.
of the parent company if they're both owned by the same company. And so then you say, well, how do I do that? And you do I just do it by a spreadsheet or do I do it in a system? And then as soon as you say, I want to do it in a system,
then
you're off into the integration side. And again, it's just, and then if you've got to file a common tax return, you have to integrate their taxes. And so, and then if you want to pay everybody out of one payroll company, even though they work for the surfboard company and the box company, then you've got to integrate that. If you want to strike relationships with vendors that are cross businesses, then you've got to integrate that. So
you're making this sound really hard, Stephen.
It is really hard. It is very hard.
And that's just on the technical side of things, right? Even if you get all these technical solutions lined up, implemented properly, you're still dealing with people. You mentioned earlier, you know, there's some people who kind of embrace change. But I got to tell you, I think maybe sometimes even that group of people, they might be in the early stages of the change, kind of naively optimistic. And, you know, I think about when you first get married, right? You have like this honeymoon period. And then you get the real data in after you go to the new accounting system and all these and even then maybe you get a little resistance.
Yes.
Wouldn't you think? Yeah.
There are there's many people that have studied this, and I've read books on it, and there's people who draw graphs of project profiles, and there is this initial wave of enthusiasm, and we can do it, and then you get started, and then the curve goes down, and then you might get a hiccup back up because you think you can do it, and then you meet an obstacle, and then it plunges way down again, and people are in despair, and then suddenly you team up, and you get back up the curve, and then eventually you achieve success. And so, yeah, it's a roller coaster, and you have to like being on the roller coaster if you are going to be in a company that acquires and merges.
And actually, from my perspective, I think that's the biggest challenge. At least I have found that accountants by nature, you know, want structure and want to focus linearly, right? They want to come in and know what they're going to do, and they want to get it done and, you know, come back the next day, have their to-do list and kind of mark it off. And not only in our industry, I think just generally speaking, it doesn't work that way like it used to. There is always a lot of change, and every day is a new day. And that's one of the struggles we're facing is, how do we take a personality that wants, you know, the sameness every day, but yet have them embrace the fact that every day is exciting because you never know what's gonna, you know, be what's gonna happen that day, and that really is it's definitely one of our biggest challenges.
Yeah, it's very difficult as well to ensure that you have a balance between being in control of the change and being out of control of the change. And because, you know, too much change, people just kind of maybe shut down because it's just like, we can't do this. I mean, you want us to do this and you want us to do this and this. And it's just, you have to say, you know, you have to somehow feel the temperature and feel the measure. And that is another aspect of integration, mergers, acquisitions, growth, and change.
You know, if I could kind of build on what's being said here, it's interesting. A lot of studies on change have shown that it's the uncertainty of what the change means to an individual, which affects their ability to get engaged and adopt what's happening. So when somebody says, this is going to change for you now, there may be, oh, that's great. And as they start to process it, they're like, oh, wait a minute, what does this really mean? I use a silly example, and I'll say that, you know, if I went to you and said, Steve, I'm giving you a car, congratulations, you might go, great, thank you, and be a little excited about it. Then you start thinking about it and going, well, wait, is this a good car? Am I going to have to pay for insurance on it? And all of a sudden, these anxieties start to build as you start to question what it is with the car. And so we found in our consulting is that as much as you can engage the people at the front, help make sure that they understand every step of the way what's coming next, you can keep their engagement a little bit longer. The other challenge I'll add, and then I'll be quiet, which is surprising for me, but is that as projects progress, there's something we refer to as project fatigue. So I'm going on this long journey and I'm excited and I'm on board and I'm ready for the change. And as Steve and they mentioned is that, you know, yes, we're going to have challenges, ups and downs, but when they start to not realizing that the end game is still out there, I just go, oh, I got so much more I have to do here. And so I think that contributes. I don't know what you all think about that.
Well, I think that you reach a point where come to understand that it never is going to end. There's always going to be something that you have to change. And it's either comes from internal demands or from external demands. And you know, we're going through a digital revolution in the world today. And so, you know, the question is, what is that going to mean on our systems, our processes and ourselves, and what are we going to look like in 5, 10, 15 years? And the portfolio of opportunities for having to address new things is limitless.
You are so eloquent. The portfolio of opportunities.
It's the accent.
it doesn't sound good in, you know, the Pensacola, Florida accent.
Well, that's what it is. It's a portfolio of opportunities. You could address it as a portfolio of challenges or a portfolio of, I don't want to do this anymore. But you know, it is a portfolio of opportunities.
So this fatigue thing, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say too, it's, you know, Maria started to touch on this, that it's important to, you know, as you're hiring these people to work in your company and you know that the change is going to happen. And I've seen it with WestRock as well over the years. You want to hire the people, contradictory to a typical accountant mindset that we would stereotype, that can be those, have that flexibility. And even being able to identify that when you're talking to them up front and assess whether or not they're going to be successful with all of that change and not just shut down.
Yeah, and, I agree.
And the high and these the people that you have reporting to you and to you have to be champions of that change to bring up the rest of the team and help support that and cheerlead these new initiatives that you're going to be undertaking. But it is the new way of accounting.
And we do an assessment, a personality assessment. We do that. And specifically, we look at their learning index. If they have a high learning index, we're all about them because they constantly want to learn and change doesn't scare them. In fact, if you aren't changing things, they get bored and they move on. And then we also have specifically an energy and energy is really interesting because it doesn't, it's like energy will, well, what are they just like slouching around in their, you know, no,
it's the
really,
Red Bull factor.
Yeah, they're right. It's like give them some caffeine and it'll go up. But it's, no, it really is about their ability to multitask and change direction, you know, instantaneously. And we have definitely, we keep track of it. And if the person isn't successful, you know, we go and look back and see were they low on energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we do sometimes have to accept people for the scale, and they may be on the low end, but we try to encourage them and help them in being successful.
Put them in the right seat.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so we also use personality profiles several years ago. Now CEO, then CFO. Found this company that we can do an quick online test, and we now have like thousands of profiles of people inside the company and people we hire, and so they can gauge both the person's individual profile against the corporate profile and against the management's profile and the leaders and their peers, and so you've got all this triangulation, and we definitely look for certain attributes, and certainly the certain attributes in people who are going to be in leadership roles, people who are more junior doing a task, I think it's not quite so important, but definitely if you're going to be a leader of change, then you have to have a certain set of attributes.
Steve, would you be comfortable sharing your story about the chicken and the pig?
The chicken and the pig. This, I learned this in Texas. There are two types of people. This goes to, do you know what the difference is between the chicken and the pig when it comes to preparing breakfast?
No.
Well, the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed. And so we've used that expression.
Oh, I'm stealing it. Okay. That's going to be like on the noon show.
I love that story because it is. I mean,
it's true though, right?
For an organization to grow and to achieve the things these two organizations have, you have to have people that are committed and are willing to go through those cycles of change, you know, the highs and the lows, and have that vision for what the future can look like.
I learned that from a very charismatic partner at Pricewaterhouse in Houston. It is not mine.
Well, I'm going to tell him I got it from you. So you're going to get the credit out in the broadcasting world. This fatigue thing, it really resonates with me. Again, you know, I'm a minority owner, but in a pretty successful little company. You know, we got like 8 studios, maybe 25 people on the whole team. But even I can sense when you were describing that, you know, I might say something and expect something to be done. And in my mind, you know, it's like, so let it be written, so let it be done. And it's just one of 7 things that I wanted to get knocked off my list today. But when I asked Ryan to do it and Ryan asked Sue to do it, you know, maybe their legs are running 100 miles an hour. And I think we've just made this little tweak and their whole world is upside down. And if you're doing that every day, every week, every month, that's something I guess senior level executives need to be really sensitive to. And maybe big time senior execs in big companies are, but I could see myself falling into that trap of doing it. Is that Do you guys see that at UHY sometimes? Or
not personally. I'm just teasing.
So. No, no, no. What are you saying, Amy?
Just teasing.
But like with clients, yes, is that something to try to coach the senior level folks through?
It's interesting. One of the areas that we do a lot of work in is process improvement. And we take, you know, it's really looking end-to-end at all of the steps that go into a process. And you bring these executives together and they're looking at it, laying out on these like 30 feet of paper, step by step, of all the things that go into one report. And all of a sudden, you see these execs look at each other like, why do we need it this way? Why are we doing this still? I thought we stopped doing this 20 years ago. And so they don't necessarily realize the big impact, because that one request might keep their FP&A team working every month in month-end close until 2 a.m, because that report's so important, but nobody even stopped to look at it or even thought that it was still being generated. So really having that sense of, if when they have time to really stop and have sensitivity to what are my requests and what are the impacts of these requests, and do they have the ripple effect on their teams?
It's the law of unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we could write a whole book from just the Stephen quotes. But then I would think it's that much more important then to have people on your team that don't just, as a senior exec, that don't just automatically nod their head and go along with what you're saying. Say, hey, you know, look, Bill, if we do that, we can do that. Here are the consequences. Have more of a peer-to-peer level kind of relationship. I would think that would be critically important.
To at least challenge, yeah, when appropriate. So right. Absolutely.
Well, and a consultant, I mean, you guys have to be professionally confronted with the execs that you consult to. All right, so let's back up a little bit, if we can. Can you walk us through what that consulting looks like earlier in the process? Like, how does an engagement, particularly if you're consulting to a firm in this kind of growth environment, can you talk about the early stages of that engagement or even pre-engagement?
Well, so I'll give you my consulting answer. It depends. And
perfect.
But it really depends really when you're brought into the process. So if I had a magic wand and could say, hey, when can I come in to help a company?
Which is never early enough, probably, or not early as it should be a lot of times.
It's not, because usually there's this mindset that we can do this, we're going to be able to power through this, and we're going to be able to get it done. But in a perfect world, what I'd want to do is I'd want to do a diagnostic and understand what's really causing the issue, because too often companies are treating the symptom. This isn't getting done timely. There's errors in this. So let's put a Band-Aid on it. We're going to put additional review over that document to make sure there's no errors. But review is a very weak form of control. We really want to error-proof it on the front end to make sure that our process supports it. So when you look at the triangle that you shared, which was, you know, people, process, and proper technology, I was working on it the whole time here. I was waiting for my shot. When you look at that triangle, if you think about process in my mind, is really kind of the bigger side of that triangle, because that's what supports your people to be successful. That's what supports your technology to be successful. So if I was going into an engagement, I'd like to go in and look at what people are doing, not from a management perspective, but I'd want to sit with the people doing the work and understand the whys. Why are you doing that? Why do you have to make that happen? And what would you do to change it? That does two things for me. It helps me get to the root cause, but it also goes back to the change. It helps me to get them engaged and enrolled in the future, so that as we start to make these real changes, they don't feel like it's being imposed on them. They feel like they're a part of it.
And if the answer you get is, I read an article in Sky Magazine on my last trip to headquarters, then that's when you have to challenge them a little bit.
Maybe just a little.
Unintended consequences or intended consequences, right?
The law of unintended consequences.
So let's talk about technology a little bit. Again, in my little world, I went from a yellow pad to QuickBooks to a lady who knows how to do QuickBooks. And we may eventually go with a little bit more of a SaaS service, a guy we talked to last week. But in your world, you're working with much more sophisticated systems, but you probably are going through some kind of progression as well. The technologies you employ, Maria, they're changing, right? Where is the state of the art and that kind of thing these days with regard to that?
Well, some of our hotel systems, and I won't name which brand specifically, is actually
we're not talking about you, Bob.
Antiquated. But so at the hotels, the property management systems are completely out of our control. They're managed by the brands.
Oh,
and
wow.
So unfortunately, which we haven't talked about it yet, but I'm sure we will, about cybersecurity and all the issues with that. You know, we're pretty much at risk, depending on what the brands are investing in. So we can only do what we can do. And the back end of the processes. So you talk about processes. And when I first joined HVMG in 2010, like I said, I was a consultant and I talked about processes and it was like this blank look. What are you talking about? You know, and trying to explain that every industry has their processes and so forth. But it's because it does all start with the processes. Like you don't want to implement technology for technology's sake. You know, you want to optimize your process and then see if you can invest in technology that supports those optimized processes. And so we're always looking for the right proper investment in technology. And again, from our perspective, it's making sure that the folks at the hotel, the general managers, the controllers, the directors of sales are doing their jobs with minimal input into technology instead of leveraging that information so they can reach the goals, the revenue goals, the growth goals, the guest satisfaction goals. We try to use software as a service so that way we don't have to make the investment. We have our partners are making the investment. So for our industry, it works quite well. But we're always looking, to improve. So, you never be, you, it's like, I'll give you another analogy. I'm sure you heard about the frog in the water, right? So
everybody's nodding their head except me. No, okay. I have. Yeah. You got to tell me about the frog in the water.
Right. So a frog in the water is, you put a frog in a pot of cold water and you turn the heat on. It'll eventually boil to death and it won't know because it's getting acclimated to the temperature of the water.
Oh, yeah.
If you have a pot of boiling water and you throw the frog in it, it's going to jump the heck out, right? So, what we don't want to be is the frog staying in the water boiling. We want to make sure we're constantly assessing what the tools are and are they supporting us in today's world.
Making boxes, counting boxes, changed quite a bit. You guys got to be implementing new technology all the time, yeah? Or doing the SaaS thing, or what's your take on this?
My take is, again, going back to my earlier comments, is the integration of technology. I'm obviously can speak far more coherently about the financial technology. We have multiple billing systems that we have inherited and use, and we're trying to consolidate and integrate.
And they just walk down the hall and say, "Stephen, fix it, will you?"
Well, it's
numbers are numbers, man. Come on,
technology. Just fix it. Technology is a very fine mix. Our IT team. It's not just the accounting team. The accounting team are the users of the data, and they are downstream. They have the downstream consequences of the technology, in that they have to close the books and they have to make sure the data moves from system A to system B. But the people who really understand the technology are our IT teams. And we have some phenomenal expertise in our particular IT systems. But some are older than others. And retaining that expertise in certain older systems is a bit sketchy at times. And so you worry about how quickly we can get off an older technology onto a newer technology. Some technologies we have moved into one platform, like our payroll system that is in the US and Canada, that is primarily on one system, which has been phenomenally helpful. So we're at different stages and different mixes.
Well, you hit on an interesting topic for me, that the stakeholders, the users of the data, because like I may have different needs and want different things from the data than the lady down the hall. You've got a whole other set of customers I hadn't even been thinking about.
Yeah, there are hundreds of customers of data.
Right.
We are the financial customers, and our role is to close the books and report our financial results. That's our role, and to keep our income statement, cash flow, balance sheet straight. And there's an enormous amount of technology and effort that goes into supporting that. However, there are a whole group of salespeople, for example, who want to know all kinds of data about their customers, and they're even down to names and addresses and contacts. And so there's a completely different set of technology required for their needs, because they have no financial, well, they have some financial data, but the financial data that they have isn't going to feed into the financial results. And so you can do the same for HR systems. So all the that's a whole other area. And then you've got all the vendor systems and all the inventory and part number systems. And
so, you're making me tired just telling me about it.
Well, that's the world we live in. I guess that's why we have a job.
Yeah, no, and I would just say, you know, given because you've been so many different iterations of growth between both of your backgrounds, what would you do the same and what would you do differently coming from different vantage points?
Oof. That's a great question. You should be sitting in this chair. Yeah.
Bring UHY in more frequently?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that was just my idea. Sorry, you're asking Steve and Maria.
Do you want to?
I thought about this question in advance, and you have to have a plan. You have to have a vision of where you want to get to, and you have to be able to communicate that plan. What would we do the same? I think we do that. So I think that would be something that we would do the same. It's obviously your plan. Things change, but you should never lose sight of where you're trying to get to. What would we do differently? That's a hard one because I think it's every situation is so idiosyncratic. It's so individual. It's so unique. I think the faster that you can integrate the teams and you can communicate with one another, that you can adopt a common culture and explain oneself to or ourselves to ourselves, the faster you can do that. So I would say maybe in some of the past experiences, we haven't done that quite fast enough. But It's very hard to generalize as to what you do differently or the same.
Thanks for giving me a couple minutes to think about that. I do have something. I think even though it's not in my title, I am actually de facto chief technology officer. And that's why I can talk about other than financial technologies because I've implemented a time and attendance system and a hotel operating system and expense reporting system, which, you know, all of them, again, when we talk about process, eventually touch on, you know, the financial system. So I do have a big focus on the entire process and making sure that the technology is supporting it. But I'm going to give you guys a plug. I probably would have hired you to help implement some of that technology. And the reason I say that is I implemented even though I implemented, you know, SAP at Delta Airlines, I mean, I was responsible for it, and we had tons of consultants. I didn't actually look for any assistance in implementing technology, and I did it like an accountant. So what happened was I just put it out there and expected people to be able to do it. And so we didn't actually get the optimal performance out of those systems. And so I think... you know, as an accountant, even though I was a consultant, I don't want to spend money on consultants. I just want to, you know, put the system in, the technology, and let people be able to figure it out and use it and do what they're supposed to. But in hindsight, I do think assistance is you get a better return on your investment because you do optimize that system more quickly.
I think I agree 100%. I mean, that's a terrific comment. And it may be a plug for UHY or any other consulting firm, but I think... you know, I wrote down, get professional help. obviously not in quite that manner, but I think getting help, whether it's firms, consulting firms or individuals with expertise that you know, get additional resources because, yes, you do get to a stage where expecting the usual rock stars in your team to just cope and do this on top of the other stuff, it gets very stressful.
Well, I'll tell you what, before we wrap, let's talk about that a little bit, getting professional help. Because, no, I would be very interested to understand from both of you, what are you looking for in a conversation or in the social proof or whatever when you are seriously entertaining the idea of engaging professional help. I mean, I think if you had a chance to spend time like this with Melanie and Amy and Frank, you'd really get to know them. But you must have some process or some criteria that you're trying to look for. I would think it would be tough.
Well, certain firms will come, certain people come with preconceived areas of expertise. So that's kind of like stage one. But then you talk to various people, and I think the skill that I look for is the ability to listen, then the ability to assimilate what has been said and kind of reflect back, and then to synthesize a certain solution. And so it's the dialogue that that you get with certain, in certain situations, that dialogue goes really well, and you connect, and they obviously get it, and they obviously understand. And so that's pretty good. And in other situations, it's kind of like, yeah, I don't think that worked too well. And so you say, well, okay, let's move on to someone else. So in my answer would be the ability to get it. And that's kind of a bit vague, but I think you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I think I do. I'd be interested in your take on this too. How do you go about this business of engaging someone and making that? I mean, that's a critical set of decisions there.
Yeah, and I agree. It's not just the getting it, but it's the getting along. You can't have a firm that's assisting you with you, which when you have culture clash. So it's somebody that matches your culture and can integrate into your culture. So a consultant where people don't even realize they're a consultant, they think that they're an associate or a part of your team. That to me is critical, more critical than someone with industry experience, though that's nice. I really think it's more of a cultural fit.
You know, I'd love to touch on that point, because I think that so often consultants come in and to be the smartest people in the room. So they come in with all the best practices and everything that they've learned over the years, and I'm here to prove how you can do it better. And we're going to look at what you do, and we're going to tell you all the points where you can make your changes. But to your point, Maria, I think that where I've seen it be the most successful is that when you engage those people at the front line and you really you guide them towards the answers and let them discover it for themselves, because then it's not an external firm's ideas, it's your people's ideas. And going back to the change element, well, now they're adopting it. They see it and they can envision the future. And so I think that was, I agree with that 100%.
I know one of the things that I think I would be looking for is, what is the word, authenticity, integrity, like sincerity, and in challenges that I had and was willing to verbalize. If they didn't feel like that they were the right resource for that, I would have a great deal of respect for them if and when they said, we're not the right resource for that, and maybe even put some real energy and effort in getting me lined up with the right. Would you agree with that, Amy, Melanie?
It's interesting you say that, because one of the things that we at UHY, especially in our resource solutions group, is when we're bringing in a consultant to work at Steve's direction or Maria's direction or somebody on their team, somebody from our team participates in those meetings initially. And, you know, we've talked about customer focus and how important that is. When we're sitting there listening, we're not listening because we're trying to make this square peg fit in a round hole. We're listening to see, okay, are we hearing what they're hearing? Is the scope of what they're looking for the same as what we talked about a week ago? And is this person, you know, are we finding that now hearing it and having everyone in the room together, are we really, is this a good match?
You really are listening, not waiting. Yeah. I had a guy explain the difference between those two, because you do sometimes have people that they're not really listening. They're just waiting for you to stop.
So we debrief after, and there have been so many times we're like, you know what? That just is not, this person's a great person, but not the right one for this project. And that's okay, because we would rather, you know, not move forward with the wrong person and crush your project and not have it be successful, because the right person is out there. It's a partnership to make sure that works.
So something Frank said earlier is, you know, obviously consultants get invited in because there is, quote, a problem. Mm-hmm. And the someone that the consultant knows has described the problem to the consultant. And so then the consultant, and this goes back to a friend I had in Raleigh, he says, who was a consultant, he says, well, then the first thing that they do is to go and interview like maybe 20 or 30 people and find out what their perception of the problem is. And so that in that dialogue of interviewing all these different people together, and often other people's perception of the problem is completely different from the initial conversation that started the consultant to get in the door. And so that may then turn out to be a situation where the consultant has to say, I'm sorry, this is not something we can solve, or goes back and says, I've gone and interviewed all these people and here's what their perception of the problem is. And then the person who went to the consultant in the first place says, well, I'm sorry, that's not what I think the problem is. And so...
It's a good point. We've had clients say, you know, we're implementing this technology. I need a subject matter expert who can come in and help us. Okay, let's talk about this. So then what they really needed, and we're happy to provide you with that person, but what they really needed was somebody to project manage that initiative and help them, because they didn't have anybody on their staff that had been through it or led it and understood all of the unintended consequences of really not putting a plan into place. And I'll tell you, that's been a huge help to this company in the long run. So,
Maria, you mentioned cybersecurity a few moments ago. Before we wrap, I want to touch on that. We've actually talked in depth on that topic here in previous episodes, but I want to get your take on that. Just kind of give us your perspective on cybersecurity, the challenges.
Yeah, it truly keeps me up at night. And you know, we have 40 hotels with, you know, probably 20 different operating systems at the hotel. They have, you know, you're at a hotel, you have a business center computer that's on the internet, you have the wireless system that's the guest system, you have your system, and there's so many different ways that these folks, they're just brilliant. You know, it's unfortunate that it seems the smartest people on a cyber are on the wrong side.
On the dark side.
Yeah, on the dark side. So, you know, what can you do? You know, you have cyber insurance, and I'm sure you do too, but...
There's cyber insurance?
Yes, there is.
I'll be darned.
Yes, there is. And, you know, it's the... but it only goes so far. And, you know, my second fear is that it's a matter of when, not if. I'm sure you've seen there are many companies that have been hacked. On the hotel side, you may not focus as much on that industry. It almost seems weekly that some hotel group or gets hacked. And, you know, it's the insurance only goes so far, and eventually the market will dry up. And then what? Because it's not going away.
I'm really passionate right now about the whole cybersecurity topic. And, you know, we have technology we can invest in to help us from a cybersecurity perspective. But the reality is, if you have employees with access to the internet, you're at risk. And I think there's been a shift recently where now it used to be the majority of the attacks were brute force, where they would try to attack the servers. Now I think it's about 60% are actually through the human element. So we'll call it the human firewall, where they're through phishing campaigns or phishing emails, key loggers, they're getting access to people's systems and they don't even know it's happening. And so since hackers are always one day ahead of the technology, right? Because we don't know how to defend it until it's been created. Having a continuous education program on cybersecurity for your employees to make sure that they can identify when those things have come in that are suspicious. We've done phishing campaigns where we've had literally 60% of the employees open the phishing email, and I only needed one, right? And so the better job you can do in training, the better you can do in reducing your risk and exposure from a cybersecurity perspective.
Steven, it's those darn people again. Right? That's the weak thing.
I guess it is, yes.
I feel like we could publish a book from this one conversation. There's been such a rich discussion and very informative for me. Before we wrap, I'd like for you to share with our listeners where they can go and learn more about your company if they're interested in that. But also, if we were to ask you to maybe provide a one or two sentence summary on growth and change and the topics we've been talking about, just some last bit of counsel or perspective on that, I'm going to land on Stephen because we know he's going to have like the most eloquent pearl, right? We'll just go around the room and start with Maria if you've got an idea.
I thought you were going to start with Steve and then I would just ride on his coattails like I have this whole conversation.
No, that's my plan. This is my show.
You know, growth is very exciting. We've grown over the last 10 years, 130%. And, you know, that's... to me, that's why we come to work every day. You know, it's you got to have a fun work environment. You got to work hard, but you also have to appreciate your associates. That's again our term, but your employees. Make sure you're appreciating the employees, having them actually participate and knowledgeable outside their area. So again, we're specifically accounting. But they have to understand the entire company. We're the back end of the process. They need to understand the front end. They need to get from my perspective, I like my accountants to go to the hotels and, you know, work the lobby. We, you know, spend an hour and say hello to the guests, because then when you're back, you know, closing the books of 10 hotels and you're getting angry because the general manager isn't responding to your questions, but you understand better, right? So I think growth is, you know, it's important for, you know, the junior accountants to understand the growth and the impact it has outside their little world. So that way they understand it's not just them. Everybody is feeling the pain and ultimately going to feel the success.
Wow. You sure you didn't stay up last night and compare that and prepare it, Stephen? Hey, where can our listeners go if they want to learn more about the organization or reach out?
Good coordinator.
No, that's fine.
I'm obviously not business development. A Hospitality Ventures Management Group, our website is hvmg.com. And on that site, you'll see our bios, but you'll also see our stories, our case studies on how we are a turnaround company and the successes we've had over the last 15 years.
So, you know, one of the things I'd like to encourage everybody if you're leaders in your organization or if you're working in organizations going through growth, oftentimes the mandate will come down that we have to do this and we can't fail. And really, that's ultimately setting the project up potentially for failure. Because what happens is individuals go, well, I had this little failure happen and I better just work through it because I'm not allowed to fail. And they don't seek the help that they need or communicate the issues. And then these little things start to build. So if I had, I'm going to try to say something eloquent like Steve, and I wish I had a better accent to do it because it would sound better. But it's, you know, fail fast and recover quickly. You know, identify when something's not working. Make sure it's communicated to either management or to leadership or your team. And then quickly find a way to resolve it and make sure that your team has the freedom and the opportunity to share those things without being negative consequences associated with it.
Miss Amy?
Sure, great. Thanks, everyone. But so, yeah, realistically, we've seen clients and companies go through lots of growth, and we've seen them react and scramble around trying to help get their teams back on track and get their projects done on time. And then the ones that are stopping and being proactive about it and building in for outside help before they get started. I think that's an important point to focus on. And I know you brought that up, Maria, too. But really take the time to know that you don't know everything and you can't do everything. So know who you can reach out to in the marketplace. Obviously, UHY would love to help. But have the right people and the right firms available at your fingertips when you need them.
Melanie, they probably stole all your good stuff, but share your perspective and where our listeners can reach out if they want to learn more about UHY and have a conversation about this kind of thing with you and your team.
Absolutely. And first and foremost, I want to say thank you, too. I don't know if I'll have an opportunity later for Stephen from Maria for sharing your stories and your message out there. But yes, in terms of growth, really to piggyback off Frank and Amy, is really the communication, right? If you're going to fail, fail fast and recover quickly. Also, just having a plan and communicating that with everybody within the organization or within your group so that there's no uncertainty, because it's the fear of the unknown, again, that helps kind of block some of that necessary change. And then reaching out when you know you're embarking upon a period of growth. We can be reached at uhy-us.com.
All right. No pressure, Stephen. We built you up, man. lay it on us.
Well, first of all, you can reach us at westrock.com. So that's a place to go. But I had the opportunity to write some words down. So dealing with change, it's exciting, if you like that. It is a roller coaster. It is also scary at times. It is demanding, but yet it's rewarding. So I think some of the things I've learned is that you have to constantly communicate and collaborate, that you have the opportunity to build teams that you may not have had the opportunity to build. You can create a culture that may not have existed before. You get to meet some terrific people. I mean, it's just phenomenal the amount of people you meet along the way. And I feel that I have been able, and so I say anybody would get to be able to do things that you never thought that you would experience, which is, you know, when I started out many, many years ago at Pricewaterhouse in London, to think that I'm here doing this in Atlanta is just, it's quite something, and it's quite a journey. So enjoy the ride.
I say drop the mic, close the curtain. That's a wrap. There's no following that. This has been an absolute delight, gang. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much.
Thank you.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for our friends at UHY Advisors, our guests this morning, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Cause and Effect Radio.